Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Attacking Third, a CBS Sports Soccer podcast. I'm Sandra Herrera, lead NWSL writer for CBS Sports, joined today, as always, by my colleague and co-host, Lisa Roman. On today's episode, we are going to recap the 2021 NWSL Championship Final, Washington Spirit versus Chicago Red Stars. There is a new first-time NWSL champion in the league, and it is the Washington Spirit. We're going to get into everything right now. First reactions, thank you everyone for joining us. But before we do that, a quick reminder to follow us on Twitter at Attacking Third. You can also head on over to our YouTube page and hit subscribe so that you never miss a new video, interview, or whenever we go live. Plus, you can catch great extended NWSL highlights. Go to youtube.com/attackingthird and hit subscribe. Lisa, what a time. How are you?
What a time. Sandra, what a time is so right. Really exciting final. It's been the narrative leading up to this championship that it was two teams that maybe not a lot of people expected. Number three and number four in the standings heading into this championship. But we knew at the end of the day today there would be a new winner, a first-time winner nonetheless of an NWSL championship. And that's what we have today in Washington Spirit. It was a fun game, and I'm really excited to talk to you about it. But you are on the ground. You're in Louisville. How are you?
Yes. I'm doing all right. I'm doing okay. I think I should also let viewers know that I'm, coming at this live from, my hotel, and the Wi-Fi is spotty. So my apologies if there's some slowness or lagginess. But it's been quite the journey here in Louisville, and there's been excitement, honestly, every single day. There's been media availability, media days, training access and stuff like that. So it's been a real treat, a real delight to sort of reconnect and sort of get back to, covering a big event like this, perhaps in the ways they were, in years prior. So the last time there was an NWSL championship event, it was in 2019. And it was a big event then. And then there was obviously the pause in 2020 due to the pandemic. And this year, with all the appropriate protocols in place, we got to have another NWSL championship final in 2021. And you know what? I'd be lying if I say it wasn't a little emotional, even for those of us in the space covering it. It's nice to know that you can get back to a place in an event like this after so many unknowns in the past. So it's been a real, real delight and a real, real treat. And I'm happy to be here to talk about it some more with you.
Isn't that the truth? We're here and we made it through. Let's say that too. It's a long season for players and media alike. But Sandra, at Lynn Family Stadium, incredible attendance record at the stadium, 10,360 fans there cheering on these two teams. How was the vibe in the stadium? What was it like in the city today on game day, walking around and then heading into Lynn Family Stadium?
It was buzzing. It was absolutely buzzing. I think for you and I too, Lisa, like in the buildup to this event, we kept seeing like, we were pushing, we kept talking, we're like, get your tickets, they're still available. And then, Lynn Family Stadium and the Louisville franchises out here, kept posting updates and saying like, hey, we're at 7,000 tickets sold. Hey, we're at 9,000 tickets sold. And like heading into the week, few days out, like 4-ish days out of the NWSL championship final, there was the announcement like 10,000, right? So that's huge for the type of facility, this USL facility and NWSL facility that this is. And it was, you just knew it was going to be a great sound, a great vibe. And then getting there to the actual stadium, you saw that. There was all kinds of, there were all kinds of events happening. There were multiple groups having their own respective tailgates. And it was sort of like a trunk or treat vibe, honestly, where everybody was sort of going around to each person's respective areas and sort of checking in and saying hello. And it was delightful. Again, it's just sort of reminiscent of all the things that we know NWSL and this community and this fandom can be, a moment to have everybody be able to sort of interact with each other and build some memories. It was absolutely delightful.
I love to hear that, and love to hear that supporters were out, fans were out. I saw on Reddit and Twitter people that made the journey either this morning or last night to get there. You mentioned all the supporters, the little trunk or treat walking around. Did you get to walk around a little bit of the tailgating and the pregame festivities, see any of your fellow Chicagoans that made the
trip? Oh my gosh. Yeah, it was massive. You know, there were tons of Chicagoans there. You know, when we got to pull up and where the parking was placed for the media entrance, you got to see really this one particular lot that had a ton of tailgating happening. And Chicago's pretty notorious for this. Their supporters group have really sort of established this tailgating culture at Chicago Red Stars games that's also sort of been adopted by some of their new ownership as well. Like ESPN's Sarah Spain has, you know, hosted massive parties at these events. And you just saw like huge, huge crowds. So watching all of that sort of in real time, it was kind of like, gosh, is this a little bit of disbelief? I'm like, is this really, really happening? And it was also really nice to connect with neutrals on the ground there, because that's the other thing about this. It wasn't just, you know, Spirit fans coming together and Chicago Red Stars fans coming together. You know, this was an opportunity for Racing Louisville and the community of Louisville to sort of get out there and show that they can put on a big event. And I really do think they delivered. Lynn Family Stadium was a great experience, a really nice facility. And to sort of engage with some of the neutrals, the locals of Louisville, they were very, very excited to be able to host this event and connect with, you know, other people traveling into their hometown and checking out the stadium. It was great to chat a little bit with my old friend Lee Navis. She's somebody who has had a strong foothold in the Louisville area. And as soon as Racing announced that they got themselves an NWSL team, she was front and center to ensure that they had strong supporters culture there. So it was great to chat with her because she's president of the Legion, their supporters group here. Mm-hmm. And we put a video on it on Attacking Third. And they had a lot of excitement too. The neutrals were just so excited to have this type of opportunity and event here. So it definitely echoed into the stadium. Well, everything that was being built up outside of it traveled and trickled into that stadium, and it was a great atmosphere.
It's almost nice that this was at a neutral location for both Chicago and Washington Spirit, and honestly, a little bit of geographically neutral in the middle of those two cities. But it great to see all of the supporters going out, and hey, they caught a heck of a game, even into double overtime. We're going to dive all into it. I'm glad that you were there and that you could give us a little bit of the smells and tastes and sights and sounds of what you saw while you were there and at the stadium.
Yeah, I mean, I had to, right? I was there on the ground. We weren't going to come onto this episode that we're doing here before the recap and not talk about some of the environment. And you know what? I'm already hyped for next year. I can't wait to see what's going to happen with the playoff picture next year in 2022. Who's going to put in a bid to host this type of event? Because it really is that it's the biggest event in American women's domestic soccer. So to sort of see it be treated as such, it was really, really, really dope, for lack of a better word. And you know what really made it so good, Lisa, was the fact that we got the championship final. That we got Washington Spirit versus Chicago Red Stars. You know, we talked about this a little bit on the preview. Let's talk about it now on the recap. Let's get into it. Let's dive into this game. We said on the preview that, you know, perhaps maybe on paper that this wasn't maybe the final that people had anticipated, right? When you're sort of getting to that final four of teams and you're seeing a club like Portland Thorns, right? A massively recognizable team in the world, right? And then you have OL Reign doing what they're doing as a number two seed. The histories between those two clubs and the possibility that there was to have them in the final and then that not happening, there were some folks that were like, what are we going to expect from Washington Spirit and Chicago Red Stars? And you know what? They delivered. It was a delightful match to have experienced it in person. And from what I saw, like on social media, people were also watching it and enjoying the match as well. And maybe in terms of the soccer and the buildup into this this game, Lisa, we have to talk about it a little bit because we were unable to talk about it in our preview because of the timing of everything. But Mal Pugh and Kayla Sharples were available for this match ahead of kickoff. It was literally the day before that the league said that COVID protocol was completed, and these two players participated in training the day before the big game. So it changes things a little bit, right? I think if you're both teams, if you're Chicago and if you're the Spirit, heading into the game like a championship final, you maybe you're preparing for a certain type of, you know, scenarios that come into play. And if you're either team, now maybe it's a disruption, maybe it's an addition, depending on who and how you're looking at it. But it was definitely some news to keep an eye on before kickoff. And I know for you and I, we were like, oh, well, we didn't get to react to this at all because we did our preview before this ever could have happened. So I guess I'm going to pitch that to you, Lisa. As these starting lineups come out, you have the knowledge that, you know, Pugh and Sharples are available. You see these starting 11s come out. Does anything stand out right away, either side, Spirit or Chicago, besides the big Mal Pugh return?
Well, I think that is the biggest thing, because when we did our preview, Sandra, you're exactly right. We knew that at that point, Pugh and Sharples were not in Louisville. They did not come off the bus. There wasn't video of them being there, but that's just how the COVID protocol worked in their quarantine, that they could come later. And then to even get a day of training under their belt, I wasn't surprised at all to see Mallory Pugh get the start, despite being out for the last game and however many days of training that she missed, especially because she did get the single day of training before the game. And because we know that in today's day, after everything we've been through the last year and a half, 2 years, that you can do almost anything virtually. So I'm sure she could join in film sessions, where she could do private film sessions with Coach Rory Daines for Chicago and look at Washington and understand things. No, she couldn't be at training, but that's what iPads are for, and Zoom. So I'm sure that Mallory Pugh and Sharples were involved in the training, in anything that they needed to be in meeting-wise, mentally. Physically, though, it's a little different, because if you are sick, how well can you recover? So that was honestly my first reaction. I was like, okay, of course Mallory Pugh is going to get the start. No surprise there, but how many minutes will she get? Will she be fit enough? Because if you are actually sick and you can't work out for 5 days, even, it takes a toll on your body. Despite being at the highest level of fitness that she is at this point in the season, heading into the final, she also missed a game, the semifinal game, in which she traditionally plays, what, 80 minutes, let's say, if not 90, maybe 75. So she's getting that repetition and that fitness level. So that was my biggest question mark heading into this. How many minutes will we see Pugh get, whether she's out of shape or just because of actually having a sickness? And there's a lot that can play into that. So that was my biggest I'm going to say like question mark around the starting lineup. But even looking at the Washington Spirit starting lineup, like no real question marks there. Everything looked as usual as it should from the matches that they've played previously. And then slotting into this one with Hatch, Rodman, Sanchez, even McKeown up top, Tara, who had a really good game, and we're going to dive all into it, but those were kind of the initial thoughts that I had looking at the starting lineup. So thanks for doing that investigative reporting journalism on the ground for us in Louisville to really give us those moment by moment updates on players arriving, players training, players getting off the bus, because these starting lineups, they didn't come out very far in advance to when the first whistle blew. So it's a little bit of like, what is going to happen?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, people are always looking for those things. How was it going to look in light of players returning or being unavailable or not? And it was also really, really nice to sort of see on the Red Stars side of things that, you know, they had extended support. You know, somebody like Alyssa Nair and Khalil Watt were available to you know, just be there and try to be supportive of their teammates, you know, in terms of this very long journey that they've all gone through together to get to the final. And honestly, same goes for the Spirit as well. That was part of the storylines heading into like this big game. Lisa talked a lot about how this was the first time in NWSL playoff history that neither the number one or two seed actually reached the final, and that both of these teams, whoever won on this day, was going to win their first NWSL championship title for their franchise and do it in a year in which both teams had to go through a lot of different things, both on and off the pitch. And for Chicago, that's really seemed to sort of chase them into this championship final, as you're looking at maybe just the on-the-field things in terms of starting lineups, players available, injuries, and players who aren't available. But as this first half develops, Lisa, you know, just...
Sandra, when you're talking about those players, is that coming to play someone like Vanessa DiBernardo, midfielder for Chicago, that maybe was a game-time start decision, who's been dealing with injuries throughout this year?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it would extend to a lot of the... Mm-hmm. Chicago Red Stars going into this match. She was a player that had picked up a knock, and I think that echoes true for even some of the substitutions that were made in this game, as we'll get into that later. But we saw something like that kind of impact this team pretty early on during the game, because in this first half, as we're talking a lot about how this is sort of it was not the first time for a Chicago Red Stars team in a championship final, but it was the first time for many of their players who were participating in this final, whether it was somebody like a Mallory Pugh, mm-hmm. or somebody like a Rachel Hill, or especially somebody like a Tatum Milazzo, the Chicago Red Stars rookie of the year, for, you know, coming in there and getting tasked with a start in this championship final. And then that was sort of the similar narrative of Washington Spirit. Many players making their first appearance in an NWSL championship final. They only had one player from their 2016 championship final run in Tori Huster, and she was unavailable for this match due to injury in the quarterfinal. So I think a little bit of some of that inexperience from both sides, right? The brightest of lights on the biggest day in NWSL can maybe sometimes contribute a little bit to perhaps some disjointed play or physical play, you know, early in the first half of a game like this, as both teams are sort of trying to get their legs under them and sort of get the nerves out, right, from under them. And we didn't see too many, I think, dangerous attempts in the first half, but that's just me doing my eye test a little bit, watching the game in present. I know you have the numbers and the stats, Lisa, but there were opportunities, and we saw both teams in that first half. I do recall from the first time hats, the possession was somewhat close. No one really sort of outmatched the other. And in typical NWSL fashion, within this first half alone, it just really came down to the duels battle. Yeah. And whoever was winning the duels in this game was the team that was going to come through in those very, very thin margins on the match. And it almost sort of felt like this very, let's just narrow in on the Red Stars here, this very sort of maybe a traditional kind of close match that the Red Stars have been used to playing against their opposition during these final weeks, especially in their first two playoff games. But then it almost got a little bit brighter for them, because while this game sort of felt like it was dialing itself up to be a little bit of a Red Star special, they almost kind of sealed some things there, because you have this very dangerous window of time, right? You're talking about the 5-minute window, maybe before a half, and the Red Stars break through on goal. And it is a ridiculous, lofty, you know, weighted cross in from the hometown kid in Aaron Wright, the University of Kentucky alum. And it finds its way all the way to a drifting Rachel Hill, who had a presence of mind to sort of keep moving in the box and stretch some things out a little bit and get a body on it. And all of a sudden, the Red Stars were up 1-0 just before the half. And that can be kind of a dangerous, position to be in if you're the opposition. Like, yes, you feel like you're not out of it, right? But a defense that is so good themselves, Washington Spirit, along with Aubrey Bledsoe, goalkeeper of the year, you know, they might be a little disappointed in conceding something like that. So Red Stars having the lead going into halftime. And I know you were probably curious, Lisa, if the Spirit were going to make some kind of adjustments in the second half, or if they were just going to come out firing.
Yes. I mean, the first half for sure was a little bit of ups and downs, and you touched on it, Sandra, and your eyesight is pretty good along with the stats. So first half, possession was 52% to Washington and 47 to Chicago. So pretty even there. Even I can give you the duels won percentage. So Washington Spirit had 44% of the duels were won in favor of the Spirit, 55 in favor of Chicago. So honestly, that kind of tracks with how the scoreline looked at the end of the first 45 minutes. And I think it's really important to touch on the fact that towards the end of this first half, Mallory Pugh went down with an injury.
And it was talk about it.
A lot of stoppage time. It was a lot of time for the players on the field to kind of come together, reconnect, or lose momentum, or get tired, because you also know, okay, we are 3.5 minutes into, or we're 4.5 minutes into our 3 minutes of stoppage time. When is the whistle going to blow? Because at that point, you don't know how much time the official is going to add on. And that stoppage time and Mallory Pugh going down and the trainers coming on, it really played in favor of Chicago. That break that they had and that mental reset that the Red Stars could take advantage of in those few minutes of not playing soccer went to their advantage 100%, because they were able to get this goal in 5 minutes into the stoppage time and past the end of the first 45 minutes. And you're exactly right. It was a fantastic goal. It was a fantastic, fantastic goal by Aaron Wright, who outside back for Chicago, getting up the flanks and taking on Kelly O'Hara. Actually, O'Hara hitting the ground. That's how cheeky that Aaron Wright's moves were around O'Hara, and then sending this cross in to the back post to find Rachel Hill, who, yes, great positioning by Rachel Hill, great form and ability to just head the ball and redirect it back towards the net to get the goal. It was like textbook quality there, but really a big lapse, I think, on Washington defense in that moment. I believe it was McGrady marking up Hill at that point. She kind of just folded like a house of cards, not standing her up. And yes, Rachel Hill had the momentum and she should have scored that goal, but she didn't have a lot of contest going against her to defend that one. But the time of this game and the first half, it really didn't even, like, it was Chicago's first half, I'm going to say for sure. And then Trinity Rodman finally started to find her footing in about the 44th minute. I'll give her the 44th minute, maybe the 41st. And she had a bullet of a shot that was hands down the best opportunity that Washington had the entire first 45 minutes. She was well outside the top of the 18, maybe even 20 yards out, 25, 30 yards out. She receives it first touch, and it wasn't the best first touch for her. And ultimately she strikes it and it goes right to Cassie Miller, and Cassie Miller, goalkeeper for Chicago, is able to save it. But that was the moment that I was like, okay, Trinity Rodman, she sees the pockets of the holes that Chicago is giving her now. Took her a long time to find those pockets and to find those holes until the 40th minute of the first half. But when she could pop into those seams and receive the ball, understand what kind of pressure she was going to be faced with in the middle of the field, she would have those opportunities. So at the half, although Washington was going down, they had their moment, one or two moments at the end of the first half to shine and to be bright and to find those pockets, to find the holes where things were working. And what we've seen from the Spirit coach, Chris Ward, is that he is a really smart coach that understands not only the game of soccer, the opponents and what they're throwing at him, but his players and how he can rotate them through, change positions, have substitutes coming in, and that they can change the game. So starting the second half, I wasn't that nervous, honestly, for what was going to happen, because it was a good game. It was a really good match. So if it stayed a defensive battle with moments of offense, I would have been okay with that. But knowing that I had picked Washington Spirit to win this, I was not going to lie, I was cheering for Washington here. I was. But that's about it, though, because that was the moment for Chicago to go up in the first half, which definitely lets a little bit of the air out of Washington's sails heading into the halftime.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, I don't disagree with any of that, honestly. I think there, again, it alludes a little bit. I'd mentioned this earlier at the top of the podcast that perhaps maybe a little bit of that inexperience from both teams for players experience this moment for the first time. Didn't maybe give us all of that, you know, high octane type of offense that we are used to seeing from the Spirit in the first half. But we knew that it would eventually come. It just sort of felt like there needed to be some touches that had to be taken and some ability to sort of play into the game. You know, and we've talked about Trinity Rodman a little bit before in the past, this being her rookie season, and sometimes, you know, getting easily frustrated on the ball and the pitch at times. Mm-hmm. Seeing a little bit of that, you know, early in that first half, but to sort of have that little 5-minute window of time, and then you have that kind of that break, that mental break that leads to a goal, it could sometimes rattle the team, but we didn't see that from this Spirit side. And if anything, if you're a neutral, I think, and you're watching this, you're kind of saying, okay, second half, game on, right? Yeah. And we saw that. We saw that from the Spirit. So with all of what Chicago has gone through with their own injuries in the second half for them, they did make some adjustments. We saw Danny Colabrico come out on the pitch, and Mal Pugh made her exit. She was not available for the remainder of the game. And some different looks for Chicago. They had a 1-0 goal lead to sort of defend, I think, a little bit in this second half. But something unlike they've had to do with their previous two playoff games, I don't believe in those two previous playoff games, they had to really sustain. They've had to sustain some pressure, but they didn't have to sustain it in waves. And what we started to see from the Spirit was that it was coming in waves. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of bending. And bending and bending and bending that was happening for Chicago, which did not allow them to maybe try to be able to hit on a counter themselves, right? And eventually it broke a little bit, but it didn't break in the way that I think people might assume, where you just finally, you press and you press and you press, and then you get one in the back of the net, but that didn't happen. What ended up happening was there was some bending and begging, and a foul was committed in the box, and then a penalty was issued. And that's the breakthrough for the Spirit, because it comes at another dangerous point, right? We're touching the hour-ish mark of a game. And I think at that point, if you're allowing Chicago to control the game defensively in a very crucial time, those first 15 minutes post second, you know, into the second half, that you got to imagine if a team like Chicago hangs on for even just 5 more minutes, that deeply frustrates the team like the Spirit with so many attacking pieces. But it ended up working a little bit the other way. That defense did break a little bit. There was a penalty issue. Andy Sullivan steps up to take this PK. And let's be real, wasn't the best taking PK. And Cassie Miller misses it by inches. And we keep talking about the margins, the very thin ones in this type of championship final. And that's one of those things that we're talking about. It's a game of inches at times. And the Spirit equalize. It is 1-1, and it really is then at that point game on. It's just it just changed things.
I mean, Sandra, you said it best. There are so many times we talk about the timings of games and 5 minutes after a whistle, whether that's the start, after a stoppage time, at the start of a half or after a goal, those 5 minutes are so crucial, which is when Chicago scored at the end of the first half, 5 minutes left after a bit of stoppage for an injury. And then at the 60-minute mark, this is when Washington has just put so much pressure on Chicago, and ultimately they draw a penalty kick against Tierna Davidson. It was a penalty kick. It was a penalty and it was a foul. She did get the ball, but way too much body on the tackle. So there's that on that. But this point in the game around this hour mark, this was when Washington was, as you said, putting so much pressure on.
I thought they were going to get another one in the next 5 minutes after that.
So much pressure on, and they figured out where the weak points in Chicago were that they could keep it tracking. Whereas having Trinity Rodman out on the left wing, where Rodman typically plays on the right, but going up against Tatum Milazzo, the right outside back for Chicago was working for Trinity Rodman. And if you get Rodman in a one-on-one battle and she continues to do well, maybe not, she's not scoring goals every single time, but it's a fun little game for her. She likes that challenge of trying to get around the defender and to keep going at the same defender. It worked. So Trinity Rodman being out on the left for Washington really worked. She had a lot of good combination plays. She was hungry for a goal. And then the penalty kick happening, it was Tara McKeown, who actually made the run into the center of the box that got the start for Washington, a player that's been in and out of the lineup for Washington and really come and gone a lot this year. But she had a really good game. She draws this penalty kick. And you're exactly right. Andy Sullivan, yeah, she found the back of the net. Great job on the equalizer. Ooh, but this was struck so poorly, and actually really unlucky for goalkeeper Cassie Miller, because as a goalkeeper, when you're standing in goal against a penalty kick, you have to imagine that the kicker is going to shoot for the corners. So as you make your decision to dive and save, you often dive forward and then sideways. That way you can cut off the angle and get to the ball sooner. Because of that, you're going full extension on your save and really laying out your body completely to try to get the ball. Because of that, Miller got almost handcuffed because her arm was completely out and then her forearm hits the ground and her knee is on the ground and the ball goes between her arm and her leg, where you can't bend your arm backwards at that point because you go from a straight arm to a bent arm. Really, if the ball was maybe an inch or two, either left or right, it would have hit off Miller's body and then it would have been a live ball that maybe she would have been able to jump on. But hey, it happened. It wasn't struck that well, but it found the back of the net. And that goal for Washington, after they had been pushing, it was almost like the balloon popped. And you said it, they were almost going to get another one. That's what I thought. Honestly, they looked like it. They were knocking on the door so well.
It absolutely felt that way. It just felt like that was the thing that they needed to unlock the game. And I don't mean like unlock Chicago, because it turns out that they ended up not doing that with the remainder of regulation.
But it was like a mental block for them.
It unlocked their brains. That's what it unlocked. It unlocked their brains. It's like, okay, it was like game on. That's what happened.
And ironically, earlier in the regular season, Chicago had committed Washington had committed two penalties against Chicago for game winners that Morgan Gautreaux had finished. And this time it's Chicago committing the penalty kick that unfortunately is the snake bite that gets the Red Stars.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny that you mentioned that, because I know we had our preview, and of course, like, I'm not going to come on camera and go against Chicago. That's my hometown, you know, but I did my written preview. And let me tell you, in the written preview, I went with the spirit, and I also nailed the scoreline. So I'm kind of proud of myself.
I feel
like a winner. I feel like a winner like that. And I literally believe in my pick. I said it's a close, narrow battle, but Chicago's luck runs out. And that's kind of what felt like happened. A little teeny, tiny bit. I don't want to take away anything from the spirit and their performance today, but it remains 1-1 through regulation, Lisa. That goal that we were so sure in our bones that we felt was going to come from this team still didn't come. We were like, what's going on? It was like, it's not even that it was like, oh, there's a force field going on around the net. That's not what it was at all. There was just, again, and this word has been used a lot by both of these teams, but there was just this sort of resiliency and this relentless effort in the middle third from Chicago, where it was just, it still was difficult for the Spirit to sort of find that breakthrough in regulation. And if you're Chicago, oddly enough, even though you have an equalized game, it almost still felt like their game plan somehow could have benefited them. But you are reminded very, very quickly that despite how good they are at keeping things narrow, keeping things organized and frustrating and stifling other teams, they have just not enough pieces. There were just so many missing pieces, because the other part of that is like, okay, A, B, and C are here for them, but these other factors are not. So there's just a lot of like, you know, I think there are maybe many what ifs for people who are thinking of that. But the players that were on the pitch for Chicago on this day were absolutely enough. I think it is fully disrespectful to try to like come into any space or do any coverage of this and say like, oh, like, you know what? They were going to lose that game because they didn't have player X, Y, Z.
I think that's what makes them even more having the probability to win a game like this, because they have a deep bench and because they've faced constant injuries and adversity on the field. And even with 12 minutes in, Vanessa DiBernardo, starting center mid, goes down and out. Like, that was even more reason to say, you know what, Chicago is going to rise above this, because that's what the Red Stars do.
So we saw as the game goes to extra time, and we saw even as it started to play out, the bench started getting utilized a lot more for Chicago. But there were also, really, again, there's also question marks around that, because even somebody like Pew, not the impact that she wanted to have maybe in that first 30 minutes, even though that's all she had in that game, there was very much a wait and see approach from Pew in the game. And it probably had a lot to do with the fact that she was not able to train in the way that she was used to train. And if you're not, if your body's not ready, if you know that your body is not ready to go 90 or more minutes in a big game like this, you maybe do approach it with a little bit of a pick and choose, wait and see type of battle. But she got taken out of the game for other reasons. But for example, somebody like a Bianca St. George is coming in as a substitution for Chicago, comes in as a substitution, goes about 30 minutes and is subbed out as a different, because again, these are players that are deep on Chicago's bench, but also have not had a lot of time. And they definitely have not had a lot of time on the pitch in big game moments like this. So it wasn't too surprising to see somebody like a Bianca St. George's get in there, maybe give Chicago a different tactical look. This is an outside back for Chicago who they drafted international, that they wanted to have on their back line as an attacking outside back. And she got pushed really high just because probably the game plan was she has 2 feet and legs and can probably run. And we saw Bianca St. George sort of playing in a front line, not in the outside back position. So it was tough. I think it was tough to sort of see.
Because that's where Chicago needed the fresh legs up top to put pressure on Washington and to try to high press and counter press and win the ball back. So then you could attack and go forward. And having a defender that high up to be a high press player, hey, it works in a moment like that, because they look tired. Both sides really look tired, especially towards the end of regulation. And then knowing that they needed to play another 30 minutes of soccer going into that, there were times when Trinity Rodman just hands on knees, heaving for air, trying to grasp at anything she could. And that's where we saw from Chicago, their bench really making a difference. They made such a push, even at the end of regulation. Aubrey Bledsoe having to make some saves in the end of this full-time game, and even the overtime, that she didn't have to make earlier in the game. The push and the waves from Chicago, they really came, which made it that much more of an exciting game for the full time that was played, honestly.
Well, it was a Spirit say, because they had their say in their ways. And Trinity Rodman, for somebody who at times during this game had to play through her own personal frustrations on the pitch and her own, you know, she said it in the postgame. She referred to it as her own immaturity. She ended up being this player down the stretch that was frustrating the Chicago Red Stars defenders, you know, people who were players who were coming in to try to multi-team her, right? Playing out of that pressure. It was so, so impressive. It almost felt correct. It was almost felt scripted that Trinity Rodman was going to be the player to set up this game winner, because she gets into Chicago's half and she, the precision and the weight on this ball to just go as far as it did. It was almost like she was quarterbacking this to a wide receiver, because you have Kelly O'Hara, probably somebody who did not have on their bingo card as the game winner, is able to be in the right place at the right time because of this ridiculous precision pass. And that ultimately was the game winner. And it was early in the extra time. There still had to be the full remainder of the 15 minutes of first extra time. And then there was a second 15-minute extra time. But it was, again, there just wasn't enough for Chicago on the day. I think once you get into that later second extra time, you start to see the fatigue in the legs. At that moment in time, Lisa, where I thought, you know, if Chicago does analyze it here and this goes to penalties, we might see some ugly penalties.
Yeah.
Because there's going to be some fatigue and some jello legs, you know, stepping up to this spot and taking penalty kicks, you know. But it didn't get there. It didn't get there because, again, and Tegan McGrady told us this. She said that, you know what, our defense is underrated too. So yeah. once they got that lead, we saw the Spirit do their own stifling. And it was very, very difficult for Chicago to break down without, you know, so many of their available or so many of their pieces that were unavailable. And it, again, script, right? And Aubrey Bledsoe getting that very late game save against Mackenzie Doniak. It just felt that way. It felt that was the way it was supposed to go. Bledsoe ended up being the NWSL MVP. The championship MVP. There's always a championship MVP that takes place post-final. And she walked away with another accolade to go, you know, to go on herself, because now she's an NWSL champion. The goalkeeper of the 2021 NWSL championship MVP. And she's been referring to this team in this same way the whole time. She's been referring to her team as a team of destiny. And it just sort of, as we walk through this, Lisa, it just sort of feels with how the game closed out, she was right.
That's exactly what it feels like. And it's weird to talk about, because it's not that Chicago played bad or there was anything. It's just that Washington had a little bit more of that hunger and want to find the goal. And I think it really stemmed from a player like Trinity Rodman, who was young and in this game to just prove herself and to prove that being rookie of the year, that she can do anything. And that's really what we saw in the Kelly O'Hara goal, a little bit of history being made in the NWSL. O'Hara became the oldest player to score in an NWSL championship at 33 years old. And the assist from Rodman became the youngest player at 19 to get an assist in an NWSL championship. But you were right, still 15 minutes of overtime to play. And at Chicago still, like, even after the first 45 minutes, they were up a goal. And that was, for Chicago, they've been in finals before. They've been in NWSL championships before. But that was their first goal in an NWSL championship. That was their first lead in an NWSL championship and a first half clean sheet for Chicago in an NWSL championship. So Chicago played probably their best championship game that they could, especially with the limited roster that they had and all of the injuries that they faced, and everything going into it, even having two players like Kayla Sharples and Mallory Pugh only be available with 48 hours before a championship final game. Really, I think the performance that stemmed from a veteran like Kelly O'Hara for Washington Spirit and Aubrey Bledsoe in goal, a player that has been so consistent for the Spirit, bled into the results that we saw from Hatch and Trinity Rodman up top, even Ashley Sanchez and the midfield unit doing a nice job for Washington. But Rodman, a fantastic game, I think. But I like that Bledsoe got crowned the MVP. I know a lot of people wanted it to be Rodman, but Bledsoe she was like the brains in the organization on the defensive end of it. And hey, we had attacking third. We have a soft spot for the defenders in the league and goalkeepers. We really do.
Yeah, no, we do. It was delightful. I think it was not the championship final that people were expecting, but it was absolutely the one that we deserved. Delightful. Did I die?
You died. You're back.
Did my haunted hotel ghost come and get me?
It happened. It's all right. But hey, we did it. We have a new NWSL championship, a champion for Washington Spirit. They bring home the trophy and the crown and everything. Congratulations to them. A heck of a season. There's still so much more to come from us and from Attack of
America. We almost made it, Lisa. The regular season is done. There is a new champion, but we'll still be around. There are going to be things that are happening in the off season, and we'll be here with everybody to cover it. And I just want to thank everybody, as always, for listening and being here with us on this very long journey. And here together. I want to thank you for listening. Follow us on Twitter at Attacking Third. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you find your podcast shows. If you leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts with a question, we will answer it during our mailbag segment. We're also available as video. Subscribe to us on YouTube. Visit youtube.com/attackingthird. Lisa and I will be back Monday with some more NWSL championship coverage and news from some of the clubs in the league. For Sandra Herrera and Lisa Roman, this was Attacking Third.
Hello everyone, it's Michael Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean, outrageous. Just search The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.